Hello, friends. Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Bigley podcast, coming at you with yet another episode. This one is about Tulsi Gabbard. And I know that I am a little late to the party here on this one because the Democratic primary debates were maybe a week ago, I think last week. And I didn't do an episode on the Liberty Weekly podcast or on the Liberty Bigley podcast kind of talking about it. But I've since had some time with the evaluations of the speech to really put some thought into supporting Tulsi Gabbard. And I've been able to listen to a bunch of people. Now, I'll preface this just by saying that War and Peace is the most important issue, of course, and Tulsi Gabbard appears being the operant word in the sentence, but Tulsi Gabbard appears to be the best anti-war candidate in the Democratic side. And if Rand Paul runs, maybe he would be the best anti-war candidate in the steps of his son, or his father, rather. I know that Ron Paul has said that Rand shares his views on foreign policy. And as an aside, it seems like Rand has had the ear of President Trump and has talked him down from certain escalatory measures in terms of Iran and North Korea and other foreign policy issues. But returning back here, I have not on the show, but in my own mind, I have, shall I say, maybe thought about supporting Tulsi Gabbard. Now, I don't vote, and I wouldn't, you know, not for any national election. I've talked about voting already on this podcast and in Liberty Weekly itself, but I thought about silently rooting for Tulsi Gabbard, and I've been avoiding, maybe avoiding isn't the right word, but I consciously have not talked about Tulsi Gabbard on the podcast too much, on either podcast too much, because I guess I hadn't really formed an opinion on her, but I listened to analysis of Tulsi Gabbard's performance in the debates. I have to agree with Dave Smith that I don't think that she was incredibly impressive in terms of, she did some good things. She had a mini Giuliani moment, to lend a phrase from Ron Paul's campaign. And she corrected someone. I don't know if it was Tim Ryan is his name, some idiot who was, I don't know if he's a governor or a senator. He was saying that it was the Taliban that flew planes into our buildings on 9/11. When in fact, you know, if you know even the most basic of basic things, which I would, suffice to say, my major foreign policy question to people who would criticize my anti-war stance in my personal life is the main one that I have lined up is, explain to me the difference between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and see if they think they're one and the same. Because honestly, before I knew anything about foreign policy, I really couldn't tell you the difference between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And a lot of people think it was the Taliban that attacked us on 9/11. And, well, not us. Shouldn't use collectivist language. But so I would venture to say that 99% of the people in the United States couldn't answer that simple question of what is the difference between Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and who attacked us on 9/11, or, you know, aside from, for lack of a better term, conspiracy theories. I personally think it was Mossad, and I'm, I guess you could say, a 9/11 truther, and I've talked about that before on the show. Don't want to get too off topic here, but when it comes to Tulsi Gabbard, a lot of people in the libertarian community who would cheer her on, and not without qualifying it, perhaps, or not without nuance, they would say that they support Tulsi Gabbard because she's the best on the war issue, at least on the Democratic side. And yeah, I think, well, that's true. I would not support her for the presidency. I don't think that she's worthy of active support. The only thing I would cheer her on for is in the debates themselves and through her campaign to keep spreading the message that she does. She uses relatively good rhetoric, but it seems like she only feels that way about the Middle East issues when I have heard her be criticized that she's not dovish on every issue. She's not a non-interventionist in every foreign policy aspect. She only sees what has been happening in the Middle East. And granted, that's one of the major flashpoints, but it's not in terms of the entire geopolitical scene. She's very hawkish when it comes to Ukraine, I've heard. This is kind of hearsay information, but I've heard that she's hawkish on the Ukraine. Not very good in that sense. She has been skeptical, again, I've heard, on the Russiagate issue. But so aside from that, she is awful on pretty much everything except for drug legalization. And she has said that she wants to end the war on drugs and has said that she wants to decriminalize substances. Now, I don't know if that's all substances, which is, the only acceptable position, but it seems like she's for marijuana legalization. But other than that, I think literally every single thing that I've looked her up on, she's been horrible on. And maybe the biggest one, the most important, is gun rights. And she is, I think, not that this matters because the NRA is a moderate gun control organization, but the NRA gave her a 0% rating. And there have been Hawaii, she's from Hawaii, there have been Hawaii organizations that have given her like an F rating on Second Amendment protections. And she supports red flag laws, which would be, calling the police department and flagging someone. And I assume there would be due, some kind of a legislative process to perhaps temporarily or permanently deprive someone of their Second Amendment rights. But as an attorney myself, I can tell you that if you get convicted of any crime with an element of domestic violence in it, you lose your gun rights forever, federally speaking. And that's called the Lautenberg Amendment. You can look that up. But it's been law since like the 90s, is that if you are convicted of any crime with an element involving domestic violence, then you lose your gun rights. And the burden for such a hearing is reason to believe, at least in Wisconsin, it is reason to believe that an act of domestic violence, well, hold on, I'm getting messed up. So to be convicted, the state would have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt that you committed an act with domestic violence as an element of it, a crime. So most things don't go to trial. Most things, most crimes that you're charged with, you'd plead out to a lesser offense. So if you plead out to anything like that, or if you are convicted of a crime, which I think in our judicial system, from what I've seen, the presupposition of innocence, the presumption of innocence, I think is just a farce at this point. And it's more of a formality because, if you want to try and prove your innocence and take it to trial, they'll stack more charges on you. And to begin with, DAs will overcharge things because that gives them more bargaining chips with which to get a plea deal. So the DA and police officers will overcharge to get you to plead to the lesser offense. And the whole thing is just scaled against you. So find yourself in that situation. So that's with being convicted of a crime. You federally, under the Lautenberg Amendment, lose your Second Amendment rights. Well, if you get a domestic violence restraining order placed against you, bam, you lose your gun rights. That's just the way it is, too. And for that, it only goes into place, I think, for 2 to 4 years, at least in Wisconsin. And I've had clients who have been saddled with this, who have had to surrender their firearms because they had an ex-girlfriend who made allegations against them, basically. And they lost their gun rights for 4 years. And the burden of proof in that instance is reason to believe. It is a reason to believe that domestic violence took place at this point in time. So if they find that that's been satisfied, they will institute the domestic violence injunction, is what it's called. And then you lose your gun rights. You have to surrender them to the police. And they like hold on to a ticket and you can get them back in 4 years. Or you surrender them to police or you surrender them to a third party that you know. And then that person has to be registered with the police and the police have to know that they have your firearms. And it's completely, I mean, it's, you wouldn't believe it that this in the, the United States, well, a place that you would think would have protections against this with our, with the history of this nation. And no one really thinks twice about it, except for if you're the one who's being accused. And I mean, let me tell you, if you want legal representation for a hearing like this, even if someone is just trying to get a domestic violence injunction against you and you want legal protection, an attorney, most attorneys will charge $250, $300 an hour. And preparing for a hearing like that, don't know. I would ask for a retainer of $1,200 or $1,500 for something like this. Easy, it takes that time to file the paperwork, and that paperwork in some places isn't even electronically filed, so you have to fax it in to the courthouse or you have to run it down there. Sometimes they won't even take the faxes. So a bit of an archaic system. And like some courts, I talked about this already on a podcast, but some courts haven't even swapped over to electronic filing yet, for certain issues. Like the juvenile stuff only was just swapped over to e-filing a couple years ago. But I think most courts didn't switch over until like 2006 or 2008 or something ridiculous like that. So Tulsi Gabbard supports the red flag laws. She supports a quote unquote assault weapons ban, whatever that means, because it's ambiguous. No one knows what an assault weapon really is. And universal background checks, in quotes, and closing the gun show loophole, in quotes, that doesn't really exist. Or I guess technically you could say, well, then any sale on the street ever, you'd, I mean, technically, any unregistered sale of a firearm, I don't know how you're going to prevent that. You're going to prevent two people who have guns from, meeting each other or being in a social circle or a rod and gun club, and just between themselves, they want to sell a firearm to each other. I don't think that's beyond the pale, and that's very hard to detect. And I'm sure that happens all the time in the United States. So, I mean, there's, I don't know how many millions of guns there are in the United States. And I haven't done too many episodes on gun control, but for me, I will never, ever vote for a candidate, despite the anti-war rhetoric and sentiment, never, ever vote for a candidate who is not pro-Second Amendment. I mean, no questions asked. And it's not just that, but she's a socialist. She supports Medicare for all, or universal health care. They're all calling it Medicare for all now, which is the Orwellian pitch now, changing your thoughts by manipulating the language. And I fell for it just then. I mean, referring to it as Medicare for all, it's just so. She is terrible on the Second Amendment. Her economics are awful. She supports universal health care. She is pro-abortion, which, sorry folks, I'm more pro-life on that side of it. That's a whole rabbit hole that I'm not going to go on. My position is not without nuance, but so I didn't check too many more of her stances. But another thing I wanted to talk about is like, I don't think that she is the greatest anti-war candidate, as I kind of addressed already. But who says that once she gets into power, she will stay the anti-war candidate? We have voted for the anti-war candidate in the last three elections, at least. Trump was, and he's dropped more bombs than anyone else. Granted, he's trying to make peace with North Korea, but I don't think, of course, not across the board. He's not the anti-war candidate. Well, he was, of course, versus Hillary Clinton, but versus someone like a Ron Paul, he's not an anti-war candidate. Or president, rather. Obama, of course, was not the anti-war president. He was the anti-war candidate. And likewise, Trump, before, when he was on the campaign trail, talked about how Iraq was the biggest mistake ever, and we're getting involved. We have stupid leaders, and we're getting involved in all these stupid wars, and we need to get out of Syria and out of Afghanistan and come, oh, spend the money at home, invest the money in our infrastructure. And so George W. Bush said that we can't get involved in regime change wars or building civilization or societies out in the Middle East. That's what he said. And it seems like the anti-war candidate usually is the one who wins, and then they go back on their word. And, granted, Tulsi Gabbard seems a little more promising than that, but she's a politician. And don't forget the fact that she's a politician. And not only that, I mean, she said in her campaign or in this debate that we need to stop spending all this money on the military so we can bring it back home and invest it in the economy, in these make work programs, and just add to the socialism going on in domestic spending. So that, that I would rather it not be spent on bombs to blow people up and kill women and children and families and that sort of thing, but taking it home and spending it here, and so encircling back to the military issue or the Second Amendment issue, it seems like I don't get the disconnect here. You know that Tulsi Gabbard is not principally anti-war because she believes that war is mass murder. And for the simple fact that she supports gun control here in the United States. So monopolizing firearms in the hands of the police and the military. And she probably isn't making, as most liberals do not, is probably not making the connection between gun control legislation and firearm confiscation or enforcement of this gun control regulation, because the vast majority of people are not going to comply with this. Or, on the other hand, if you have a legit gun store owner or a gun dealer and they would like to keep selling these weapons that you are making illegal, how are you going to stop them from doing that? I mean, you can coerce and threaten them, but if they refuse to comply, you're going to have to send in the ATF, and the ATF will confiscate firearms at gunpoint. That's just the way it is. Or if, you don't even have to wait for, you don't even have to wait for major gun manufacturers to break the law. You have people like Cody Wilson, which I haven't been following him lately since he got in that statutory rape scandal. Oh, excuse me, sorry. Those 3D printed gun guys, you just send the ATF in after them. They will probably keep doing what they're doing indefinitely to piss you off, and you're gonna have to track them down. And, ultimately, this gun control stuff is backed up with death. I mean, Ruby Ridge showed us that you can take a piece of steel and trim 2 inches off of it, or however much it was, and that's a death sentence from the ATF, because they'll come in and they'll shoot your wife in the head, and they'll shoot your son, your little, your teenage son in the back over this. And That's just the harsh reality of it. So, no, I don't think I'll be supporting Tulsi Gabbard. I do like watching her drop bombs during the debate, theoretical bombs, rhetorical bombs. But I'm not confident at all that she will keep her word. And even though I believe the war issue is one, the most important, if not, well, it is the most important, that doesn't excuse her other positions. And I'm not going to carry water for someone who is so terrible, and hypocritical, really, with their anti-war stance, but not being peaceful across the board and failing to see the force of government, perhaps. So, yeah, well, that's just my little bit on Tulsi Gabbard. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you agree with me, which if you don't, that's fine too. But just kind of food for thought here. Oh, and maybe I think maybe I need to listen to Dave's points a little more, but he really, I think Dave Smith, that is, I think he really needs to address on the show the bad positions that Tulsi Gabbard has. And if he's going to openly support her, then I think that he should go down that road a little bit more and really lay out in detail the things that she has said. I just saw a quote here from 20, look this up, 2017, Tulsi Gabbard appeared on Fox and told one of the correspondents that she was not in favor of the Iran nuclear deal. And she likened it to Winston Churchill's agreement with Hitler in the 1930s. And I don't know, the Iran nuclear deal, I think she said that we need to get back in it when she was on the campaign trail here. But why the discrepancy? I mean, that was only 2 years ago. And the Iran nuclear deal, I mean, it was important for us to be in that deal. And she flip-flopped on it now, but the condemnation with which she stated, I mean, this likeness to Churchill's agreement with Hitler. And I don't know, it's just, I don't think that she, I mean, I don't think that she's principled anti-war in that sense, that she is really the anti-war candidate, the anti-establishment candidate. They're giving her the silent treatment like that, but I don't think she has the track record to be a white knight in this situation. So, and of course Dave Smith can do whatever he wants on his show. I respect him and his opinion, but I don't understand all of his unconditional seeming love for Tulsi Gabbard. And he's called her out for her socialist stances, but he really needs to go into how bad she is and how bad her Second Amendment position is. And, just a suggestion on his end, I suppose. So, yeah, well, I had a really good episode for the Liberty Weekly podcast. And in that episode, Keith came back to the show and we debunked Ayn Rand's objections to anarchism. That's at libertyweekly.net/122. And I think that it was a really good episode. It was good to have him back. I think we have an extra special rapport, and I need to be making more effort to do shows with him more often. So I would definitely check that one out. We have another good one coming up. I haven't decided what I'm going to run with, but this Friday I'll be talking to DK Williams of the Law Podcast, and we'll be reviewing the Supreme Court's recent decision on the gerrymandering issue. And I think it'll be pretty interesting. I've been meaning to talk to him for quite some time. So we'll be doing that. I appeared recently on the Actual Anarchy podcast to review another episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation. We did season 2, episode 9, The Measure of a Man, where Data is put on trial to determine whether or not he has sentience because he is a robot. He is an android, rather. He's an android. So that was a real good episode. My Patreon supporters have access to it and have for quite some time now. because they usually get early access and access to bonuses. And we had an AMA with Keith where the Patreon supporters were able to actually join a Google Hangout call with Keith and myself and talk to us. So we answered fan questions, I guess you could say. Had a real good time with that, and the recording is up and available to the patrons who couldn't make it. So that's pretty cool. If you want to join our Patreon subscriber list, go to patreon.com/libertyweekly and you get access to a whole bunch of really cool benefits. There's over 100 posts that are archived over there that you'll get access to as well when you join. So that's a treasure trove waiting for you. Libertyweekly.net/email for the email list, or libertyweekly.net/Amazon. Do all your Amazon shopping there at no cost to you, and we get some bones thrown our way. So really appreciate you listening to this show and the B side of this show. Like I said, I hope you really think carefully about Tulsi Gabbard and about the horrendousness of all of her other positions. It really is kind of appalling. So she's just another politician, folks. All right, well, have a good week. I'll probably be back with some saving remarks on the 4th of July. Peace.